You're listening to Vatican Radio. Saturday, February the 8th, marks the feast day of Josephine Bakhita, a Sudanese slave girl who became a religious sister in Italy and was declared a saint in the year 2000. Her dramatic tale of kidnapping, forced conversion and torture at the hands of different owners at the end of the 19th century is a stark reminder of the atrocities that enslaved people still continue to suffer in many countries today. But hers is also a story of redemption, a powerful symbol of liberation and hope for all those suffering from the chains of physical or mental oppression. In 2007, Pope Benedict told her story at the start of his encyclical on hope, Spe Salvi. And in recent years, church leaders in the UK have introduced on February the 8th a day of prayer and reflection for all victims of slavery and trafficking.
Not just on modern slavery, but a time for us to pause and reflect about what we owe the millions of people who lived and died when slavery was legal.
Ambassador Louis C. DeBacker heads the U.S. State Department's Office to Combat Human Trafficking, coordinating his government's response to this growing global phenomenon. He's won many awards for his work at the Justice Department investigating and prosecuting traffickers, pimps and abusive employers. This past week, he's been in Rome meeting Italian and Vatican officials to learn more about the Church's response to the scourge of human trafficking.
I've come to the Vatican the last day or so to meet with a number of the actors that are working on the problem of human trafficking. This is something that the United States government, through our embassy to the Holy See, has been working on for quite some time now, especially with the women religious, the group Talita Kum, which is the international network of consecrated life against trafficking in persons. But we've seen a lot of energy in the last few months with Pope Francis around the issue, bringing in things that he's done in his previous role in Buenos Aires. And we felt that it was a good time to look at the relationship and to see how we can work together going forward to answer his call to come together on behalf of the trafficking victims.
Certainly he's been very outspoken about it, hasn't he? He's called it a crime against humanity.
You know, it's not only a crime against humanity, but something that should motivate all of us to ask ourselves, where were we when our brothers and sisters needed us? And I think that that's very much in keeping with the approach of the U.S. government on this issue, certainly since the passage of our modern anti-trafficking statute in the year 2000, which looks to see what our government's doing to serve the victims, to bring the traffickers to justice, but most of all, to prevent this horrible crime.
The Vatican held a seminar looking into this issue, came up with a number of proposals. In what ways, perhaps, are you hoping to work together to find some solutions to this problem?
Well, the 42 proposals that came out of the November conference, which was held by the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, was very much a roadmap, I think, for any entity that wants to work on human trafficking. The things that they set forth for the church, for civilians, for governments, for all of us together, are very common sense yet spot on. This notion of the responsibility of corporations to look in their supply chains against human trafficking. The responsibility not to simply say, think of this as a women's issue, but to say that men, not just in religious life, but men in the laity, have a responsibility to stand up against human trafficking as well. Again, very common sense things, but they're exactly what we all need to do together.
You've been working on this issue for many years, haven't you, already? And despite the increase that we've seen in awareness, in prevention, in victim protection, the numbers drawn in by the traffickers just seem to keep on growing.
You know, it's the best estimates globally are that there are about 30 million trafficking victims around the world, and only about 46,000 victims are found every year. That difference between the 30 million that are out there, wondering if anybody cares, wondering if we know that they're there, if we know what's happening to them, and then the few that we are able to help, it's bringing those numbers closer together that I think is one of our goals. Recognizing that every one of those cases is a lot of work. It takes work on the part of service providers, on the part of social workers, on the part of hospital staff, on the part of lawyers, on the part of law enforcement, all to come together and to protect that victim. it's going to take an awful lot of work, but only working together.
These statistics are shocking, as you say. And yet, can you perhaps give us one story, one example of a way in which these victims of trafficking have touched you personally, a story that can perhaps bring these numbers down to earth for us?
Well, I often think about the first trafficking case I ever worked in 1994-1995, where the allegations that we learned about had happened several years before. And the migrant workers in the United States often will suffer for a growing season and then eventually escape and then fade into the community and never tell anybody what happened to them. And we were investigating a case with Guatemalan migrant workers who'd been abused in the fields in South Florida. And we were looking for a man who had been beaten up 2 years before. And literally, all we knew was his name, his hometown in Guatemala, and where he had worked for one summer in Florida. And so I called my home parish, my peace and justice coordinator, and told him what I was working on. And he said, well, let me make a few phone calls to people that my home church had worked on with the Central American troubles in the 1980s. And about 3 days later, we get a phone call from upstate New York saying, this is Antonio Perez. I hear you're looking for me.
So a good example of where the church can reach places that other organizations simply don't.
Well, and it also made me realize that when I get stuck, I call my own parish. I think that it really showed the notion of, you know, the only way that we could work together is by not just having the government and the church or the government and the attorneys that work with migrant communities not trusting each other. We had to find a way to trust each other. What's amazing is that the survivors from that case, now 15 years later, men and women who suffered in silence, men and women who were enslaved in the fields in Florida, in the United States. Just 3 weeks ago, they announced a memorandum of understanding with Walmart stores, the biggest retailer in the world, that's agreeing that they're only going to buy tomatoes that have been picked with the safeguards and the monitoring that this group of escaped slaves now has put in place for farmers in Florida. That notion of 15 years ago, they were people who I had to help rescue. Now, they're my colleagues. And I think it's seeing them make that transition from victim to survivor and to be able to walk with them on that and support them in that, to see them in the White House talking to President Obama. I mean, to me, it really shows just how far we can come. And I think with the leadership that we're seeing from Pope Francis, it really is an unlimited potential.
These are important signs of hope. This is often a dangerous business, though, to be in, isn't it? Have you yourself received threats from the gangs, for example?
Not from the trafficking gangs. I mean, I used to be, when I was a prosecutor, I used to do work against some of the white supremacist and nationalist movements, and that was a much more violent undertaking than the human traffickers. One of the things that we've seen is that the human traffickers, when brought to justice, are not nearly as powerful as their victims think they are. Invariably, when I was an attorney in the courtroom, what the victims would say after they got done testifying is they'd turn to me on the way out and they'd say, he looked so small. And I think that that's one of the things that our job is as we shine the light on these traffickers, these people that lie, they manipulate, they use promises of love and a better life. When we can expose them for just how small they really are, we take away their power over their victims. And I think it's the power of love and the power of hope can overcome the power of fear. So it is risky. There's no doubt about it when you're going up against criminals that there is some risk. But I think that we've very much seen that the strengths of the victims outweighs the threat from the traffickers.
Next weekend, the church in the UK is marking a day of prayer for victims of trafficking, the Feast of St. Baquita. It's the second year they've done this, and I understand that this is being broadened, that the US Catholic Church is going to be part of this too.
We're really excited about this, that it's going to be in Washington, D.C., at the National Shrine of the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception. And I think that for us, seeing the Catholic bishops join their UK counterparts on this, we hope that this is a fire that will be lit and go worldwide, really a time to reflect. And frankly, because of the saints' own experiences, not just on modern slavery, but a time for us to pause and reflect about what we owe the millions of people who lived and died when slavery was legal, when slavery was how the West organized itself economically and socially. I think we all do have a responsibility to pay back that debt and to go out and fight slavery in all of its forms today.
Is a day of prayer like this, do you think, an important way of reminding people that slavery is not over, that these other terrible ways of being enslaved continue?
I think so, and I think that it really comes to us in a very different way now. If you think about the papal exhortation, when he says that this is all of our responsibility, I think that Pope Francis looks at this and realizes that it's not enough to say, I don't have a domestic servant who I'm abusing, or I don't go to prostitutes, so therefore I'm not part of the problem. I think that what he's been saying in the past year now is very much making us have to look at ourselves and say, do I know who picked the cotton that's in the shirt that I'm wearing? Do I know what's happening with the fishing fleet? What kind of abuses are being done so that I can live the life that I want with the cell phone and all of the gadgets that I need? And only by confronting that and making it personal. And I think that the day of prayer will hopefully force people a reexamination of what their own role is in this. And of course, as William Wilberforce said in his first speech to Parliament, when he introduced the bill that decades later abolished slavery in the British Empire, now you can't say that you don't know. You might be able to say you don't care. And I think that's one of the things that we've seen, is that knowledge has to be followed up by action. And so I think it's good to have a day of prayer, but then we need to follow it up with a day of action as well.
Thanks there to Ambassador Louis C. DeBacker, head of the U.S. State Department's Office to Monitor and Combat Human Trafficking.